This is Data Citizens Dialogues, your guide to bringing trust to your data, decisions, and all things AI. For Calibra, I'm Thomas Brents. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Data Citizens Dialogues. If you're looking for the latest stories from our collective Calibra customer community, well, then you're in the right place. And as always, I'm Thomas Brents, host and vice president of portfolio marketing here at Calibra. And today I'll be joined by Justin Heller, the chief data officer at Synchrony and one of the editors for CDO Magazine. Let's listen into our discussion on all things data.
My name is Justin Heller. I've been the chief data officer at Synchrony Financial, closing in on 10 years. Synchrony is the largest provider of private label credit cards within the United States. We're also on the S&P 500. I'm originally from New York. Spent most of my career working in financial services in Manhattan. And then when I joined Synchrony, I relocated to Connecticut.
Oh, wow. Well, first off, I'm going to latch on to something you said there. 10 years as CDO, that's incredibly rare. What's kept you there so long? How have you been able to maybe show value?
Yeah, sure. So I kind of always spent my career somewhere in between the business process side of things and the technology side of things. And, you know, I've studied and have always been interested in the interaction that people have with technology, and in particular, the content and how important content is. I don't know if people are familiar with this book. It was written in the 60s. It's by Marshall McLuhan. And the effective theme of it was, the medium affects the message. And so that always fascinated me, how the same piece of information can take on different meaning depending upon the medium in which that message is expressed in.
I like that. So you have this background on medium, the message, building relationships with people, the process oriented. I think even in earlier conversations, you let me know that you had like a background in poli-sci as an undergraduate. I mean, there's a lot of things there that helped to shape who you are as a person. How have you kind of taken that ball of wax and like employed it in your team and let that build your strategy for how your team goes forward?
Yeah. So I think talking about political science, I specifically studied game theory. And game theory is really, when you're looking at it from a political science perspective, about strategies and outcomes. And that really influenced me. I talk about with my teams how important it is to understand not only what we're trying to do, but why, and specifically the outcome that we're trying to achieve, and understand that that outcome delivers value. And there are two ways of looking at it: what good things will happen or bad things could happen if we don't deliver X. And I think that really stuck with me in terms of those outcomes, because in game theory, the whole premise is people operate typically with either safeguarding things so that they don't lose the game. That could be to an objective of minimizing their losses, as well as trying to maximize their gains. And I always found it was really important, particularly working in the corporate world, to understand not only what people are trying to achieve and why they are, but what's in it for them. And so I try to instill within our data strategy that the strategy is really not about data management, but it's really about driving the outcomes that are important to other people in the organization, since they are the ones that either create or consume the data, and that the things that we build have to inherently demonstrate back to individuals what's in it for them. And I think that comes back from the origins from both the political science as well as the interactive telecommunications piece, which is really around the interactions that people have in complex systems and with technology.
That's amazing. I can imagine how that must have an impact on culture, right? You're talking about change, you're talking about how people just inherently work. They pull things closer to their chest. They kind of hold things dear, maybe push back a little bit on the process you put in place. Talk to me a little bit about culture and why that's important at your organization.
Yeah. I actually was talking about this with someone recently. Political science, if you kind of strip out the negative side of the politics, right? It's really around forming these social contracts or agreements with how we're going to work and behave around each other. That's what effectively laws are, these social contracts. And if you think about in a company, companies have cultures, they have values, and they form social contracts. Those are things called the code of conduct, your policies and standards. And it's basically an agreement of how we're all going to work. And I think some of the key values that are really important to success of any organization, as well as to really drive that common goal, right? That single voice across the organization that we're all moving in the same direction are values like honesty and being driven, execution oriented, and collaborative. And that's tough because that requires people to be willing to have difficult conversations with each other in very tactful, respectful manners because we all have the same goal. And that's what I mean by really understanding what's in it for the individual so that everyone's goals can align because we're all trying to achieve the same objectives through different means. And we have to help people understand how everything connects so that their best position say, okay, I understand where my contributions fit. I understand, Justin, what you're trying to achieve. And now I can understand how it complements and satisfies what the organization's trying to achieve.
And that, of course, all the human factor all works until the agents take over, right? And AI starts being the one that's making the decision and isn't driven by the same core values, right? Which I think is a good segue. I mean, one of the other things we've talked about, Justin, is you got this role as one of the editors at CDO Magazine, which is, I think, probably on every listener's list of just like places you got to constantly check out for news. I know it's in my, what I call my zero hour in the morning, right? I try to zero in and read the latest, right? And so many great articles have come from that. So, but I'm sure that you've talked a lot about AI with your peers. How has AI sort of changed the role of the CDO? And what are CDOs doing today around this, around AI and the, you know, kind of the storm that we're all trying to weather?
Yeah, I think the essence of the role of the chief data officer in a good space is to be a trusted advisor to others in the organization, particularly because the role lives at that intersection of people, process, and technology. And so I'm very fortunate that I am playing that role. I get invited to many of our committee discussions on both protecting the business and growing the business. And so AI, aside from the fact that it's, you know, the hot thing right now, and I think that we have to acknowledge that a lot of the excitement is around the fact that it's the latest hot thing. I think people are trying to really sort out its place within an organization. I don't think it's going to replace people or decisions. I think what it's going to really do, like most technologies, is help enable people to be more effective and efficient, to enable process to better scale. And I think at a point in time, if it is able to make decisions, there's still always a degree of having someone in the loop to validate. And that even exists with just people working, right? That's a quality control piece. Today, we have people reviewing other people's work. Maybe in the future, it's people reviewing a combination of artificial intelligence output as well as people work. And this isn't new. I think we've had these types of machine-influenced outcome systems for many years, regardless if it's process automation, which is one of the earlier forms of AI, or some of the decision support tools of predictive analytics. You know, now we just happen to have an AI that is comprehensible in a human language where we can actually have a conversation. I think that's the novel part. Yeah, that's the change. And so I end up talking a lot about the ethical use of these things and the responsible use, because it's new territory. And again, I go back to my background in political science, which is really around social contracts. How are we going to agree to interact? And so I think that's all around ethical use and effective use of our tools as well as, you know, how we work with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot there. It's the balance between, right, opportunities and risk, right? There's so many opportunities to, whether it's automate, make decisions, help people just kind of do their jobs better. But there's a lot of concern on the other side. There's a lot of risk, right? Why don't we talk about some of those concerns and also any of the pitfalls that you see with your background in, you know, interactive telecommunications? Has that given you maybe a clearer perspective on this?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to the medium is the message, right? The generative AI is so compelling because it presents comprehensible results, right? We can interact with it. So that gets back to that interactive telecommunications background. And as a result, I think it entices people to want to believe what's being said because it's easy to understand and relate to, which doesn't necessarily mean it's accurate or correct. And I think the explainability piece can be challenging. In many cases, I mean, I know from my own experiences when I've used it, I've been able to tell where some of that information came from, right? Oh, okay, I feel comfortable. I know the reference. And in some instances, I can't tell if it's real or not, meaning fabricated information or what they call hallucination. And that's the piece that worries me. I kind of draw an analogy within the company because I think a lot of companies are using this human-in-the-loop model as a means of, hey, the risk has been addressed because we have a person in the loop. I sort of like liken it to, imagine, you know, you're a teenage child, maybe 14, 15, just beginning to learn how to drive a car. It's not fully trained yet, does not have a license, has certainly observed, you know, their parents driving for many years, so has an idea. And let's say, you know, your teenage child gets into a self-driving vehicle by themselves. Self-driving vehicles on a major highway, and the AI in the vehicle fails, and the teenager has to take over driving. Now, are they really prepared to take over driving? Have they been adequately trained to be effective in using the vehicle? And I think that's what we have to keep in mind with human in loop with AI is that, you know, we have to make sure our workforce is prepared to use it and understands the risks, which is why, like with a car, you know, you're taught, you know, the safety signals and safety protocols and safe distance driving, and you wear a seatbelt, and you have all sorts of other protocols that help protect not only you, but others around you. And I think we have an obligation to train our workforce and our talent in general in the use of AI so that it can be an effective and safe tool.
Totally. And I love that analogy. The teenager in the car gets into the self-driving and then goes haywire, right? What happens? It's very akin to what, you know, a knowledge worker today could get themselves involved with if they start. Yeah. So it's a really good, I think, analogy. When we start thinking about putting that in the hands of our workforce, right? Or, you know, embedding it, every vendor's got some, you know, AI widget in their tool. What do we start to do about the data, right? Because to me, it always comes back to, this thing is going to be as accurate as the data that you feed in. And of course, you and I were both just at Gartner together, and you can't turn a corner without hearing about data quality or AI governance, right? Things that really focus on improving the trustworthiness or the confidence in that data. Talk to me a little bit about how CDOs, how are you navigating those waters to make sure that governance is first and foremost in the conversation?
Yeah, by not leading with governance. Governance tends to turn people off because it feels like red tape. And organizations need to move quickly, right? Speed is effectively our intellectual property. And what's challenging about data quality is it kind of lands in two camps. There are scenarios or rules that are absolutely true for everyone. And then on the other extreme, you have data quality rules or requirements that are specific to a process. And for the same piece of data, different processes may disagree on what good is because their level of tolerance is different. So either way, I kind of look at data quality as really a detective mechanism that looks for instances of exceptions that need to be investigated and addressed because they have impact on process. So knowing that generative AI tends to be focused around unstructured data, where the data has actually been pulled out of these relational systems where you can easily measure quality, and then lives on over time. And over time, data loses some degree of relevance, right? The context in which it's created is not the same 5 years ago as it is today. And so, like, I think if organizations proactively dispose of unstructured data, then they're reducing the data quality risk landscape for AI, because then the AI is using data that's most relevant to the organization because we're required to have it. And so I think those are the two things that have to happen is, you know, proactively detecting data quality issues in your relational systems on a day-to-day basis, scenario-based, connected with process requirements, and then aggressively disposing of data after you need it in unstructured repositories.
That makes sense. And there's a value in that, right, to the organization to not store data for 20 years. You don't need it. It's not tied to anything. Regulations say don't, right? Ted, talk to me a little bit about value, too. What are some of the ways that you measure value at your organization, the ways that you can kind of, you know, show that you've increased value for the organization?
Sure. I think data management is one of those subject areas. It's very difficult to articulate value easily. And so generally when I'm asked, like, what advice would you give people in data management is not to make the projects about data management, but to make the data management capabilities a part of what's needed for the project to meet its objectives. So one way to look at it is, oh, if you have a business process already in production, and let's say that process has risk, and part of that risk is, oh, we could lose money when this process executes. Well, I like using data quality to detect those scenarios. Hey, you can be really popular in the organization if you've now put in detective controls that identify potential revenue loss areas. And there's always a degree of operational loss in every process. It's not avoidable. But you can reduce that risk from X units to Y units, right? And that decrease is the value. I think the other side of it is direct revenue. And frankly, data management is very difficult to demonstrate how it ties into direct revenue. Oftentimes, you can demonstrate by increased productivity in your analytic workforce or increased productivity of a process. That increased productivity can enable growth. And again, it's dependent upon the organization. Some organizations monetize their data, in which case the data office can be directly tied into that and monetize the data accordingly. But not every organization feels comfortable monetizing their data.
Absolutely. And so many good examples there of ways that people can start to think through in their own organization and their own constructs, what works for their organization on how to actually, you know, sort of start to tie to value. I think a good segue to think about the future, right? Where do you see the CDO role turn next? What do you think it looks like in the next 5, 10, 20 years?
I think it's going to be very influenced by the individual, right? Because I think the role is so broadly defined that it has the ability to flex and to keep up with the rate and pace of change. And I've started using within my organization, particularly within my team, I want us to think of ROI is not just return on investment, but relevance of information, right? The information has to be relevant for the particular problem or the initiative that we're trying to drive. And if that data or that information is not relevant, it's going to be challenging to obtain that ROI from a financial perspective. And so I think the role of the CDO is going to continue to shift into trying to strike that strong balance. And it's got to be a balance between protect and help enable growth. It's hard to predict what's coming around the corner, but I think the role of the CDO will continue to be critical in that influencing, shaping space, very much based on the culture of the company and then the individual in that role as well.
Okay, that was a great show. I really enjoyed getting to talk with Justin, learn more about his background, and frankly, to discuss a little game theory. Wasn't that fun? As always, I like to take what I learned in each episode and give you my big three takeaways. And up first, AI gives your organization a big opportunity, but you have to balance the risks. As Justin shared, you can manipulate it, you can change it, and if you're solely relying on it to make decisions for you, well, then you better be confident in the data that it's using. And governance is great for this, isn't it? I see this as a huge opportunity for those working in data governance and data management today. Second, the path of a CDO can often be quite short. I believe the latest research is that, like a CMO, it's often 18 to 24 month endeavor. And Justin, he's been able to extend his career to a decade with Synchrony. And why? Why? Well, it's about the partnerships and value creation. Work on those relationships, become a trusted advisor, and deliver results. Finally, my last of three takeaways, becoming a CDO or a data leader at any level can start from many, many backgrounds. Look at Justin. He's a poli-sci major in college. He has this level of curiosity and the belief that data needs to be reliable and the dedication to fix it forward, the dedication to being part of the solution at his organization. And that's what it takes. Team, thanks for listening today. I hope you'll subscribe and join us for our next episode. And for Calibra, this is Data Citizens Dialogues, and I'm Thomas Brents. Thanks for listening. Want even more insight into managing your data? Visit calibra.com/podcast for additional resources on the topics covered in our show. Be sure to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Enjoy what we have to share? How about a 5-star review? At Calibra, we absolutely appreciate your support. Data Citizens Dialogues is a production of Calibra in collaboration with Stories Bureau.